hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell and Jeff Janey.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 42 of the No Better Than Average podcast. I am Jeff Janey, and along with me today is my co-host, my cohort, my buddy, my pal, Jacob Cazell. How you doing, Jacob?
I have never been called a cohort before. I think I like it. It kind of has a bad boy vibe. I don't think anybody would ever accuse me of having a bad boy anything.
No, not at all. You just glossed right over that I called you my buddy and my pal, but whatever. I'm going to go over here and cry in the corner.
Well, okay. I was so fixated on the cohort part. Of course, I would also consider you a chum and possibly a stand-up fella.
Hey, Shay.
How are you doing this fine evening, Jeff?
You know, I am doing really, really well. I cannot complain even a little bit. So that's all good.
Well, that is really good.
Yeah.
There's always room for complaining.
Well, you know, it doesn't really do any good anyway. So
no, it usually doesn't. Unless you're high enough up the food chain, complaining is just not good for anything.
Yeah. So, hey, just take care of the few things we always take care of at the beginning of the shows. If you want to call in, give us a comment, suggestions, ask us a question, please feel free to do so by giving us a call at 317-643-1212. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah, we're lonely. We haven't had a call in a little while.
Right?
You guys are not showing us
the
love.
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Anybody out there?
I wasn't playing along with the bit.
No, you weren't. That's okay.
I'm not a good improver.
That's okay. Hey, you know, we do really appreciate the support we've gotten so far. We're going to go ahead and throw this out at you. If you would like to help us be a better show, you can head over to patreon.com/nobettershow. You can throw us a few bones. If you enjoy what you are getting from us, we would really appreciate your support. Music playlist. We haven't got any new songs. So
I have a theory about this, Jeff.
What?
It is August, and I don't know about if you have noticed this at your new place of employment, but I have certainly noticed this at my current and your former place of employment. People have just tuned out. It is the end of the year. Schools are starting, if they haven't already started, and people are taking their vacations. I don't think any of our listeners out there are listening to us right now. I think they are all on the end of summer jag and getting their vacations in and packing the kidlings off to school, and that's they're not giving us the love.
Yeah, that could be. Well, if you think he's wrong and you want to give us some love, we would love to hear what your least favorite, the song that you hate the most. And, you know, so far we've got some pretty good ones on there, but we haven't got any new ones in the last couple of weeks. So come on, guys, let's.
And I want to point this out because I defended this song last week, and then I went back this week and listened to it, and I have to rescind my defense. And I said, oh boy, did I ever say that Muskrat Love by Captain and Tennille is not such a bad song. And folks, it's a bad song. It's just not good. And they had some other really good hits. I think that the nostalgia of the Captain and Tennille was clouding my judgment because Muskrat Love is a pile of garbage.
It is. I mean, they do have good songs. Don't get me wrong. It's just that Muskrat Love is not one of them.
No, it is really bad. So I wholeheartedly agree with Carl, who hates that song, because, you know, it is no do that to me one more time or Love Will Keep Us Together. No. It's really bad. Oh, God, yeah. Is it bad?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
But yeah, absolutely. Let us know what songs you hate, everybody. We the deadline is coming up quickly, because I think Jeff said he wanted 15 songs or until August 15th, and we are recording this on August 12th, so I think we're going to go ahead and extend it another week, since this show won't even go up until next week. You're listening to us in the past. Let us know, people, so we can put together a really horrible playlist, because we would really like to do that
for
you.
We're up to 12 songs, but I think we can extend it out, like you said, because of back to school. Let's get up to 15 songs. I don't think that's too much to ask.
There's definitely two or three more bad songs out there, everybody.
Yeah.
You gotta let us know what they are.
Yeah, there are. So, let's talk about, well, nudity.
I like nudity. Wait. I want to qualify what kind of nudity I like.
I like
a sausage fest.
Oh, any kind is better than none.
No, when you told me the story, it absolutely blew my mind, because it is insane.
So my little topic header here is CGI nudity is here to stay. So for any of our listeners that happen to watch Game of Thrones, there was in the season finale at what was basically a gut-wrenching nudity fest.
Oh, it was brutal. It wasn't good nudity. It was just cringe-inducing.
It was very cringe-inducing. There's a scene in the season finale of Game of Thrones where Cersei Lannister has been imprisoned by a religious zealot, for all intents and purposes. And basically, to allow her freedom, her punishment is to walk through the main city of the kingdom naked, while basically everyone calls her a whore.
Right.
And throws
while
stuff
being
out.
Shamed by a bell ringing lady.
Yes.
And I saw that lady at Gen Con. It was awesome. But there was no naked Lena Headley following in front of that
person. Oddly enough, there was no naked Lena Headley anyway. So,
and that's what blows my mind, because I thought that was just a brutal scene. And my girlfriend and I both commented on, holy crap, how did she do that? Like, just to be in that position and to go through that was just like unfathomable watching it. It's so hard to watch as the hundreds and hundreds of people and the extras who are lining the streets are smearing her with foul things. And it's hard to watch. Like, it really does. It's physically difficult to watch.
It is. So, interestingly enough, she wasn't naked at all for the filming of that. So, I saw an interview with Leah, or Lena, right?
Right, Lena.
Lena
Headley. Heddy. There's no L there.
So, I saw an interview with her, and she's done nude scenes, including for Game of Thrones, before, and doesn't really have any problem doing nude scenes. She was a little concerned about doing this nude scene because it is so brutal. And quite honestly, her physical presence, her emotions showing through her face, I mean, it was really hard. I mean, like you said, it was hard to watch. So she said she was worried about being able to pull that off, because trying to do a scene which, you know, in real time, you know, like in real time, in real showtime was what, 25 minutes probably?
Was it that long? I mean, it was minutes long.
It seemed like a half an hour.
It
okay,
did. But a couple of minutes anyway.
Yeah, I think it was more than that. Let's go with 5 minutes.
Okay, I'll spot you five.
That's probably what, 50 hours of filming.
Significantly more than five. Yes.
Yes. So she was worried about being able to emotionally handle that, just from the standpoint of, you know, you're naked on set, you're self-conscious about your nudity, she said a lot of her nude scenes have been, you know, two or three people on the set, and this was
not
literally
hundreds and hundreds of extras
hundreds
screaming
and hundreds
at
of
her.
People that she's never seen before. And so basically she had said, you know, I really don't want to do this. So they put her in a green leotard.
Okay.
And she did the scene, and then they filmed a body double, making the same walk. And I read another article talking about that filming. So that filming, it was interesting because instead of the people jeering and saying horrible things, they were still making noise, but it was like almost like a food fight type of atmosphere.
Like a wacky, like, woohoo, and throwing things. Yes. Like a happy thing.
Yeah.
So she's not all self-conscious at hundreds of people calling her, you know, a slut and a whore.
So I thought it was really interesting. And then they basically use CGI to take that naked body and put it on the green leotard.
To me, that's, and you, like, okay, so the thing I thought was amazing in looking at the article that you had sent me is the way it was so seamlessly done that the way fans spotted it, because Lena Headey had done previous nude work, is people who were more intimately familiar with her body of work. See what I did there?
I see what
they
you did.
Said. Huh, that doesn't look like her in other films that I have seen her in. And they started researching and looking and discovered, hey, that's not her at all. So yeah, there it were was some completely moles, convincing.
I believe that were absent that shouldn't have been. So yeah.
And never for a second did I think that they were pulling any CGI trickery.
No, and I guess this isn't the first time this has been done. The Machete movie with Jessica Alba. There's a scene in that movie where...
Yeah, they painted her out of her underwear.
Right. And that was all CGI done. So I guess it's not new, but I think the way they did this one was new. And I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about the CGI in Game of Thrones before, but basically when you watch Game of Thrones, none of that is real.
Yeah, there is really absolutely
nothing in that that's real. I mean, it is just, it is amazing. And you just got to wonder, I mean, you know, obviously we're still eons away from having no actors at all. But you say eon, are we, I mean, like, are we 15 years away from not even having actors?
You know, but I mean, so like the best of the not real characters are still mocapped. And so, you know, like you look at somebody like Andy Serkis, who played Gollum, and he played the main monkey in Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And he's played a lot of characters. And an animator still has such a hard time capturing the nuance of the physicality that I think we're a long way away from rendered actors that are so convincing that nobody questions that they're a real person. But I think that, you know, just like a cartoon, we don't have computers that do cartoon voices. There's still going to be a demand for an actor to provide that physicality.
Right. But there's a difference between being a physicality and the what is Hollywood standard of near perfect beauty that is required of, you know, actors now. Is that going to be more, you know, for instance, there are probably, you know, actors who don't look like, you know, Brad Pitt that can emotionally have a huge range. And how long is it going to be until we have an actor like that who is being basically CGI'd to look like a Brad Pitt or, you know, insert, you know, your favorite male actor, six-packed abs here, you know, whoever that may be.
Well, like the next step is kind of like a real-time Photoshop, right? Where, you know, when the software becomes so powerful that these effects are seamless and convincing, it's not necessarily that you get rid of an actor, but you can, you know, more easily push actors beyond the realm of humanity in making them perfect and not just perfect, but like extra perfect. And, you know, I mean, we see things every now and then that come out about what amount of retouching goes into magazine covers. And, you know, that some of the magazine covers end up with known famous people who have been tweaked and pushed to proportions that aren't even viable for a human.
Yeah, but not physically possible.
Right. And so, but we still don't quite have that for video, at least not at anything but the highest of budgets. But, you know, those tools weren't available to the common person 20 years ago for print work. And now, you know, you can go find a cracked version of Photoshop, or heck, for I think $10 or $20 a month, you can become a legitimate member of Adobe and have Photoshop. And, you know, it is available at the common level if you have the talent to use those tools. So could we be, like you said, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 years away from real-time Photoshop for video?
It's just going to be interesting to see, you know, how we progress. Because, you know, you talk about, like, you know, obviously right now Westerns aren't chic, right? But there's going to come a time where Westerns are chic again, right? I mean, that happens.
Sure. I mean, everything's cyclical, right?
It goes in cycles. And,
well, you know, what's his name? Tarantino. He's got one that's being filmed right now.
So, but like, are we 15 years away from a new John Wayne movie?
I'm
just saying. I mean, like, you know.
You still have the uncanny valley to contend with.
You do, but it's getting harder and harder.
Well, you can hide a multitude of sins with quick cuts and motion.
Sure.
But when you're lingering on an actor's face, you're not going to be able to pull off a fully CG face.
Think about a CG face. So Tron, right? And they redid...
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah. And you could tell. Don't get me wrong. Like, you could tell. But think about that versus just 10 years before. My point is like, are we on a, you know, logarithmic
track here?
Logarithmic. So, you know, 10 years from now, are you going to be able to tell?
Yeah, it's not going to be 10 times better. It's going to be 1,000 or 10,000 times better.
So it's just, I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, where they push and how they push, and then you get into, you know, if they do get to, let's say they do get to the point, 10 years, 20 years, there's going to be a time, right? There is going to be a time where they can do it and you won't be able to tell.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we can
absolutely
agree with that, right?
Well, I mean, you already can't casually tell today for things like this.
Right. So when and who owns the rights to Humphrey Bogart? Or, John Wayne.
Whoever owns and manages the image of their estate. I know there's a big company here in Indiana that does image licensing for deceased actors. What are they? It's like KMG, I think. Mm-hmm.
They own
all of it. Like, they own the likeness of Elvis.
I think it's just going to be interesting to see, you know, where all this goes.
Well, you know, and it's very interesting because one of the things that was brought up in this article talking about Jessica Alba in Machete is apparently she has said and gone on the record of saying, you know, I won't do nudity. And then there's the scene where she's standing in the bathroom and apparently is nude. And so fans went, wait, what the heck? And she said, well, it's not nudity because I wasn't really nude. They just made it look like it. So, you know, there's a slippery slope there too. And so obviously people like nudity and sex. Like, those are things that we kind of are, you know, genetically predisposed to want. And so when the technology becomes eligible, or not eligible, but attainable by someone who doesn't have $100 million notice or a budget, but what happens when somebody is able to slap a famous star's face on a pornographic tape and all of a sudden say, oh, hey, look, we got the newest, this superstar over here just put a sex tape out, but they really didn't.
Right. No. Yeah.
And if you can't tell the difference, that's very damning and damaging to someone who now has to go on the offensive and, you know, prove that's not me when you can't tell.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know where we go. I mean, I think because of technology, you know, social mores haven't caught up yet again. And it's a situation of, you know, don't be a dick. Don't put someone famous's face on your sex flick. But people are going to do it because they can make money and people are horrible. And,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
That's going to happen.
Sure.
And it shouldn't.
Yeah, but it will. But so, it is going to be. Yeah, I don't know.
So, yeah, I was fascinated by that. So, I thought that was a really interesting story.
So where do you want to go next?
Okay, so we've got some big stories and we've got some little things. Maybe hit a couple of our tidbits because you've got some tidbits on here that I had not. Again, I have been out of the loop. I've been busy ever since Jeff left our organization. I've had to pick up all his slack. Loser. I haven't had a chance to do all my research. So a new King's Quest adventure. What?
Yeah, so this was kind of exciting. I grew up firmly in the .. quest adventures. So
oh,
King's
yeah.
Quest, Space Quest, Leisure Suit Larry.
Can I get some Zork in there?
Yeah. Well, all the ones that I just mentioned were Sierra, graphic. Right?
Yeah, yeah, Sierra. Yeah. Well, no. Was Leisure Suit Larry Sierra?
Yeah, yeah.
Were they? Okay. Yeah. I was thinking they were Infocom.
I'm pretty sure those were all Sierra.
You're right. I think you're right.
So, I was firmly in the, genre of those Sierra games. Now, I personally was more of a Space Quest kind of guy, but I do remember King's Quest fondly.
Yeah.
And so they are releasing a new hand-painted adventure game.
That's cool.
On Xbox 360, Xbox One, PS3, and PS4. It's available on those specific platform stores. It's coming out as episodes.
Okay.
And you can go one of two ways. You can buy a season pass, which is supposed to include 6 episodes for $39.99, or you can buy each episode individually for $9.99.
Okay.
And they're touting it as this is family friendly fun that you can all sit around and play together, and it harkens back to the days of King's Quest, only on a console and a lot prettier than King's Quest was.
That's interesting, and I'm curious, how can they afford to do hand-painted animation?
Because people in Asia work for very, very little money. Yeah, I mean, I don't mean that to be mean. I'm just saying hand-painted animation in some ways can be cheaper.
Okay, and you know what? I'm actually watching a video because King's Quest Episode 1 is out as of July 29th, and it's kind of it definitely reminds me of that weird, it's 2D cell animation in a 3D world with some of the camera moves, but I do have to say it is gorgeous.
Yeah, right?
I mean, it's very reminiscent of, oh gosh, I mean, I want to say Dragon's Lair?
Yeah, kind of.
But more 3D, if that makes sense. I mean, Dragon's Lair is that just gorgeous cell animated. I mean, you can't beat that. But this is beautiful. Wow.
I think it's worth looking into.
It's got Wallace Shawn as a voice?
Yeah.
And Christopher oh, man. I don't even have a console. And I want to just watch this now. I don't even want to play.
Somebody needs to buy a console, as I've been mentioning for quite a while now.
I just want to hear Wallace Shawn do things. I love him. It's amazing.
I sit and watch my son plays Destiny.
Okay, I don't know that game because I'm a loser.
It's an Xbox One game, but Peter Dinklage is one of the voices. So I just sit and watch because I like listening to him.
Does he speak in a British accent?
Yeah, actually.
Because he's not at all British.
He's from Jersey, and not the Jersey from England, not from the New Jersey. Yeah.
I had a quasi brush with Dinklage story. So when just down a quick rabbit hole. So this is the weirdest, worst possible place for everyone, not just me, for everyone around to think, holy crap, that's Peter Dinklage. So when I was at Gen Con, I was going out of the bathroom. I had to stop and make a pit stop, and as I was coming out, a person of short stature, by which I mean an honest-to-goodness little person, was walking in with the frickin' Lannister haircut and beard. It looked exactly like Peter Dinklage. I mean, spitting image. I don't even know if he was cosplaying, but he should have been. He would have won all of the cosplay gold. And that's not a good place for everyone in the immediate vicinity. And there were 61,000 people there. I think 58,000 of those people were in that bathroom to all at the same time realize, holy crap, it looks like Peter Dinklage just walked in to take a pee. And everyone just stopped what they were doing to stare at this poor guy as he walked in and, talk about pee anxiety. He had 200 people in this bathroom all trying to figure out if Peter Dinklage had just walked in. I don't think it was him, but man, it looked almost exactly like him. It was the weirdest thing.
Excuse me, sir, I need to take your picture.
It was so awkward. So awkward.
Oh, wow.
So yes, that King's Quest looks beautiful.
Yeah. So hey, I want to talk about one of the other tidbits because this is I think one of the coolest things. So okay. Did you know that all NFL players this season will be wearing RFID chips and be tracked on to their exact location on the field at all times?
No, and that is kind of amazing.
Yeah, so the NFL...
Like to the point where fans can see this information or just for the purposes of coaching?
No, actually it's going to be used for fans. Well, I mean, it's going to be used for coaching too.
Sure. But,
so NFL has partnered with Microsoft for the Xbox One and Windows 10.
Okay.
And they're going to basically, as NFL.com posts highlights from the game. So it's not exactly real time at this point.
Sure. They got to crunch the data.
But nearly real time. I mean, we're talking 45 seconds to a minute and a half post play. They're going to have trackings on the players, including speed, distance, direction, and keep track of things like actual yards that the person gained versus wow. actual yards traveled. Because one of the things you don't think about, but so a running back, you know, let's say they gain 110 yards for the game.
Right.
They've probably run 250 yards?
Sure, but they're only counting forward progress.
Right. So, but they're going to track all of that. They're going to track top speeds. And NFL and Microsoft are actually making a game out of it. So wow. in Xbox, you can do things like, it's kind of like fantasy football, except for you're basically saying, okay, I think this player is going to have the top speed this week. It may be a defensive back. It may be a wide receiver. It may be a running back. You can say that I think this player is going to travel the farthest.
Huh.
And they're turning it into this game. And it looks like it's going to be pretty amazing. I'm kind of stoked for it. And with the Xbox One, this has made me want to, and I'm actually done this now. I haven't played with it much, but I'm going to run my TV through the Xbox One because you're going to be able to snap this information off to the right and still watch sure. your game. So I think it's kind of cool. I'm pretty excited about
cool. it. Cool. There's a quote in the article here, and this is amazing. It says, the only thing that keeps us from having an instantaneous is the human element to cutting the highlight. Mm-hmm. If somebody in Culver City for the NFL has to edit the highlight, as soon as it hits NFL.com, we get it, and we can tie in the data instantaneously. We have all the data as the game is being played. You could see the little position graphics live. There's complications to showing that, but it's something I think we'll end up trying to do in the future. That is amazing. So it looks like it's not going to be every stadium to start. They're only doing it in 18. Well, it looks like they had it in 18 stadiums last year.
No, it's going to be everywhere.
Wow. Year. That's yeah. amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting. I'm curious what additional technology they have to embed into the field. Obviously there has to be a lot of positional sensors to track that, and obviously to distinguish between 22 players. And I'm curious to see if they're going to put sensors on the refs and even people on the sideline, if they'll track that or not. And really more than 22 players, because you're subbing players in and out sure. all the time. So they have to track player, all of that.
Every player will have it. I believe it's in their helmet.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, years and years ago, and when I say years and years ago, I mean like in 1996 or seven, I was working with an internet company here in town, and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway was trying to do something similar where they were tracking transponders in all of the cars. And at that point, it was like super cutting edge. And I think that they could track each car with a level of granularity about 10 feet wide. So I don't really know how wide the speedway track is, probably 50 feet wide. And like every 10 feet they could track it. So they were trying to plot these little blips around the track sure. and it wasn't working at all for them, but that was the future almost 20 years ago. And now we've got real time. That's well, amazing.
You know, we talked about the RFID in the Disney wristbands and how at restaurants right. they just brought your food. And this kind of harkens to that. I mean, with the current RFID technology, they can track you down to literally right where you are.
Oh, yeah. So,
I mean, I think it's kind of cool.
That's interesting. I'm curious if it's strictly going to be that the chip on the player is tied to a grid in the field, or if the chip will have, I mean, because there's room in a helmet, you could potentially have a chip that had GPS in it. And
yeah,
I mean, the battery only has to last for a couple hours.
No, I think they're only using RFID.
Huh. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I certainly didn't think that's where you were going with this. I saw all NFL players to wear RFID chips, and I thought, well, maybe they're tracking some kind of like concussion tracking or something like that. No, we don't care if they hurt themselves. We just want to see in real time.
That's right.
Which, that's pretty darn cool.
That is cool. And then my last little tidbit that I saved, and I'm just putting this because everyone needs to go to the show notes and go watch the video, because Tesla has introduced this charger for their cars, and it's if you've seen Spider-Man and the Doc Ock appendage,
right?
It's that, and it automatically plugs into the car and charges it.
Okay, so I want to point out, yes, it is cool, and but it's not prehensile because it doesn't have a thumb.
Oh, it has a thumb. It has three thumbs.
And it's a very slow and deliberate finding the charging port and plugging itself in. It is not at all intimidating. It is not waving around with sharp things going.
Oh, it's snick, just snick, a snick, matter snick. Of time until it just impales the owner who isn't being nice to it. And don't take this away from me. It is really freaking cool. And oh my gosh, this is just one step into the robots crushing your skull.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I would graft this onto my spine in a second. But it's not quite as intimidating as you're making it out to be.
Oh, it's so intimidating.
It is kind of a neat thing. You should.
Technology,
we'll put a
link. It's scary, Jacob. It's scary.
It's the reason we shouldn't make the robots autonomous, because they will rise up and do horrible things to us.
I just thought, I mean, no, it's not intimidating at all. And it's very slow and deliberate, but it is really, really cool. And it's basically an elephant's trunk.
I mean, yeah, kind of okay, yes. Yeah, yeah, right? It is like an elephant's trunk. Now, if you want to see terrifying, there are these robots that use an artificial muscle, and they use three of them, and they are pick-and-place robots for assembly lines, and they look like something straight out of the Matrix as they pick things up with incredible precision off of a line and place them other places, and they look like they're just going to, like you're going to come down an assembly line, and these things are over you, and they're just going to rip you into little bits and pieces. So that I am terrified of. This, it's kind of cute. And I'm sure if you can afford a Tesla, you probably don't have to worry about the cost of one of these things.
No.
But I bet it's not cheap.
We'll see how cute it is when it rips your head off and holds it.
There can be only one.
No, I mean, you know, obviously. But I just thought it was really cool.
It is. It is very cool.
Okay.
I guess this one technically qualifies as a tidbit, although I did not have it on as such. And it's a little bit old news at this point, but I have talked with several people, even people who are Amazon people, and they did not know that this was a thing. But I don't know if our listeners remember, but way back in March, specifically on March 31st, Amazon announced this thing called the Amazon Dash. And everybody thought it was an April Fool's joke. And it was a little button about maybe the size of a pack of gum, and when you pushed it, it would rush to your door a product like Tide or Bounty or something like that.
And
Charmin, whatever. And the whole internet went, oh, that's stupid. This has got to be a prank. And it wasn't a prank. Amazon said, no, guys, we're really serial. This is a thing. So flash forward like 5 months, and it is a thing. And you can get one. They are $5 a piece while supplies last and only available to Prime members. And they have 18 buttons in total that you can buy for brands such as Tide, Bounty, Cottonelle, Glad, Huggies, Smartwater, Kraft Macaroni and Cheese, Gatorade, Gillette, Maxwell House, and more.
How about Sriracha? Is Sriracha one?
No, Sriracha is not one, but I guess the way it
missed
works.
Opportunity.
Yeah, so like if you say, I have to have Tide, and I need Tide whenever I push a button, you can get one of these Tide buttons, and then you can actually tie it to a handful of different Tide products. So it could be fabric softener or some sort of detergent, and when you push the button, it will ship Tide to your house. I still haven't pulled the trigger on one, despite the fact that at the time my girlfriend thought it was a fabulous idea that whenever you needed some toilet paper, you just click a button and it would create an order and send it off via your smartphone. As Jeff wanted to point out, it wasn't quite as magical as I was making it out to be. And
actually, once you've approved it once,
I did not read that.
It will automatically send it. Now, it will only send one at a time.
Oh, so you can't just go click and get like 30 packages.
If you click
it
30 times, that won't do anything. Each time, it won't accept a new click until your previous order has arrived.
Smart.
That is smart. But here's my take on this, okay? Tide. Yeah, that's great. Dude, I go through way more sriracha than I do Tide. So you shut up and give me sriracha.
They do not have they will probably listen to you if you tell them that you want sriracha, but they don't
I'm
have
I'm telling
sriracha.
Them right now. Listen, Amazon. Sriracha. Make it happen.
Yeah. Like, some of them, to me, don't make sense, and others make a lot of sense. Like, the toilet paper, to me, makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
Kraft macaroni and cheese dinners makes less sense.
Yeah, oil of Olay? Really?
I wouldn't
really
think I...
how much oil of Olay are you putting on your face? That seems a little silly.
Yeah, and you know, the
like
other
Gillette,
thing,
I guess maybe I don't know.
Maxwell like
House
bars. Because
like you really need Maxwell House. Right,
I need
when
mediocre
you need
coffee, and I need it 2 days from right this second. I don't know. But again, and the one I think is the most bizarre is the smart water button, because I need bottles of water sent to me that are smart somehow. It's still just water in a bottle.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Like Gerber formula? Well, okay, because you go through a lot of formula.
Sure,
you know,
and
that's
diapers.
Okay. Yeah, those make sense. Yeah, but some of them don't. Like, and how sriracha didn't make the list, because I just think, you know, the little rooster.
That is a missed opportunity.
I think it is.
So the amazing thing is people have been getting these and ripping them apart to figure out what is inside of them. And there is actually a website out there called Hackaday, and that's Hackaday. And they have a teardown of one of these and some information on how to hack it to control things wirelessly for your own devices. So that's kind of cool. And it looks like there's some additional hardware on there that is that not necessarily mentioned. Like apparently there's a microphone connection. I don't think there's a microphone on there, but they figured out how to hack a microphone into a dash button. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, there's some kind of cool stuff there.
You know what that means? That means Amazon's listening to you all the time.
They poop a lot, Johnny. They're ordering more toilet paper. I don't know. But I mean, it's obviously a wireless platform. It's got Wi-Fi and Bluetooth on board. And so, you know, some interesting hacking opportunities. They're calling it a well-engineered all-in-one Wi-Fi device. So that's kind of neat. The thing I don't like is that obviously this is going to make Amazon even more money. And, you know, when you're committing to it at this level, you're really not price shopping and price checking. You're trusting them to have a fair price that you're willing to pay. Why are you dinging me for $4.99 up front? You're not even giving me like $5 off my first order or anything like that. There's no incentive for me to do this other than my own laziness, which, to be fair, knows almost no bounds. But it still makes me just a little irritated that I got to pay $5 for the privilege up front. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, the way you take care of that, your next order that you make, put no rush shipping, get your $5 credit to Prime Pantry. Yeah. All of these items are Prime Pantry items. Boom, you just paid for it.
I understand, but I don't want to have to jump through hoops. At the very least, I think they should give you a $5 credit off your first dash order.
Sure. Yeah.
Like I get they want to do some sort of limiting, because if it was free, I would just say, oh, give me all 18
or
of them.
A dollar off your first five orders, or, you know, something.
Something so that at some point I get paid back for this, because all it's doing is making me one step closer to never leaving my house again. And let's be fair, Amazon is dangerously close to that as it is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, come on, do something, Amazon, a little bit. But I don't know.
So let's tack one of these big items that you put on here.
What do we
want to talk about here?
Let's see. This one might affect a lot of our listeners. And there was a couple of weeks ago, and I have... not kept upon this story probably as well as I should. And so I haven't really heard a whole lot that has come from the fallout from this. But a couple of weeks ago, there was a major, I mean, just wowzer big major Android vulnerability discovered. Researchers called it the worst Android vulnerability in the mobile OS history. And it affected almost every Android phone out there. So what it was, and just like Apple had their issue with a MMS message vulnerability issue a few months past, it is a message that can infect your smartphone by receiving an MMS message. What was interesting, though, is that researchers were saying that unlike most malware, it wasn't necessary to open this message for your phone to get compromised. NPR reported saying this happens before the sound that you've received, even before the sound that you've received a message has occurred. That was from Joshua Drake, a security researcher with Zimperium. And he goes on to say, that's what makes it so dangerous. It could be absolutely silent. You may not even see anything. What happens is you get this MMS message and boom, it can affect and infect your phone. And then once you actually open the message, it will reactivate the code and it can inject any arbitrary code and give someone complete remote control of an Android device. They're saying it can do everything because of the nature of how Android works. It can take over the microphone and the camera. It can copy data and you wouldn't know any of this was happening. So they could turn your phone's microphone on remotely and listen in while your phone's just sitting there. You have no idea. So Google has classified this as a high severity, which they define as allowing remote unprivileged code execution, which to me, that's pretty darn severe. The really, really scary thing is it affects, and I thought I had this number here, but I'm not seeing it now. It's just a mind-numbingly large percentage of all Android devices. And the real problem is that because of the way Android and the phone manufacturers work, if you have an older phone or a non-flagship phone, odds are your manufacturer doesn't give two craps about you, and they're probably not going to fix this. So right now, if you have a Nexus device or you're running pure Android, Google's got your back. They've already fixed it. But if you're running anything but the absolute latest version of Android, which is like 98% of all Androids out there, you are vulnerable. Only good news is so far, nobody has found any evidence that the vulnerability has been exploited in the wild. Take that with a grain of salt. It's probably just a matter of time, or the people who are exploiting it are being smart and keeping their mouth shut about it. But they're saying that, best case scenario, they're thinking only 20 to 50% of existing devices will be patched because of just how hodgepodge and patchwork the manufacturer phone, handset, and carrier ecosystem is with Android.
Yeah, this is kind of scary. I did hear someone say that, if you have an older phone and you feel like you're at least somewhat technically competent, go out and check and see if CyanogenMod has a release for your phone. It has been patched. And so if you know how to ROM your phone and you have an older phone and you want to be protected, download CyanogenMod.
Yeah, okay, so you say that, but very glibly. I mean, that is beyond the capabilities of a lot of people, even people who have a phone that could run CyanogenMod.
Sure, I understand what you're saying. I feel like a lot of our listeners probably can handle doing what I just said.
Yeah, but those are our listeners aren't the people that are vulnerable in any case.
You're right, but the people that are truly vulnerable to this, they're never going to know. I mean, yeah, I know what you're saying. It sucks. It's horrible. But, what are you going to do? This is the downside of having an open source operating system, right?
The downside of having such a fractured, non-centralized control operating system.
Because that comes a part of being open source. I mean, it's harder to control that because
Okay, but you could make the argument that a lot of the core of iOS is open source software. Now, it is wrapped up in Apple's proprietariness, and they
But it's that wrapping that allows to take them. But that wrapping it up, that portion of it is what makes it usable and patchable in a quick manner. Like, take for instance, you know, you are the one that talked me into putting Ubuntu on my machine.
Right.
I mean, but Ubuntu is, you know, it's wrapped up in people using
true
open source, but I'm relying on the fact that the people that have wrapped it into Ubuntu are going to protect me from things.
Yeah, you're not going to go out and recompile your own kernel.
Android's not like that. Android is way not wrapped up in, I don't blame... The one thing I want to point out, I don't blame Google for this.
No, they've already fixed the problem. They fixed the carriers and the manufacturers. Shame on you guys.
It's really the carriers and the manufacturers that, man, guys, you guys got to do something to get people a little more up to date, especially on something like this.
Well, I think a big part of the problem is that, you know, obviously the phone business is pretty cutthroat, and outside of the flagships there, you know, and outside of Apple too, the profit just isn't there. So these companies are putting out a phone and sending it out, and 6 months later, they're going to have a new revision or a completely new product, and there is no, I mean, it's planned obsolescence. There's no plan from the carrier standpoint for supporting what they put out there.
Yeah, and there's no profit in supporting what they put out there. I mean, like you said, if you look at the profits being made by cell phone companies or mobile phone companies, I mean, Apple's really the one making money. And, you know, even for a Samsung, there's no profit. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the right answer is. I wish that, and I know it'll never happen, but I almost wish that Google would pull it back and say, okay, guys, you know, we gave this whole open thing and we let you guys all use this. We're done. That, you know, we're going to bring Android back. We are going to maintain this. You want to use it? Yes, you can use it for free. We're not going to charge anything, but it has to be our version. And, you know, strong arm the carriers and say, you know, updates have to happen. And I mean,
The genie is out of the bottle though, because even if we imagine a scenario where Google could do that, there are still north of a billion devices out there that are probably never going to be, at least 50% of which are never going to be patched or updated. And most people have no idea what this means for them, and they're not just going to replace their phone because, and it's going to take, it's the same problem of self-driving cars. Even if we have self-driving cars become available, it's going to take decades to get all of the traditional non-self-driving cars off of the roads. It's the issue with smartphones. And, you know, it is interesting. I just wanted to point this out that I don't remember the total percentages. I think it's about 15% of smartphones are iPhones, but Apple controls 93% of the mobile profit.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So there is just, I mean, I'm not saying that iPhone is better, but I'm just saying that, you know, it is an undisputable fact that there is almost no profit on the Android world.
You know, another rabbit hole kind of, although, I mean, we could almost call this another topic. This week, HTC, right?
Right.
On the stock market is now worth less than cash on hand.
How does that even work? How have they not been bought yet?
Well, I mean, that's a good question, but that
how have they not bought themselves and gone private?
Well, I mean, that happened this week, that the HTC stock valuation is lower than cash on hand.
That's crazy. And how much cash do they have? Like, last time I remember seeing an article about HTC's cash on hand, it wasn't a lot of cash. It looks like, this makes great radio. So it looks like they're about $1.80 per share on Monday, August the 10th. And that is in, Where is HTC? Taiwan? I don't know what the Taiwanese currency is. It's 56.8 Taiwanese currencies. And the company, so it closed at 57, and the company has 57 per share in cash. I don't know what that means in real money.
Okay, let's give this another shot. Sorry about that. Now, so HTC...
Technical difficulties.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is kind of cool. I actually, in the little interlude, which we cut out for you, dear listener, I just did some Googling, and this is neat. So Taiwan's currency is called the New Taiwan Dollar, which doesn't that sound like something out of a science fiction novel like New Taiwan? The year is 2358. So apparently it's worth $1.76 in U.S. dollars, good old American greenbacks. That's their share price. And they have 57 new Taiwan dollars worth of cash, which if my math works, and it doesn't because I'm terrible at math, is $1.77. So they actually have a penny per share more of cash than they have of stock value. Now, I have no idea what that actually means, but that means something. They have $1.5 billion in cash.
Well, it in theory would mean that what you exactly said, they could buy themselves.
But then they would have no cash.
No, you're right. They would have to.
And if they bought all of their stock, wouldn't that cause a run and cause it to go up?
Yes. Yes. But it's not a good thing.
No. So this is interesting. It says sales have fallen by more than 75% since 2011.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a shame because HTC makes some darn nice hardware.
Yeah, they do. I don't
understand why they have struggled so much. And why, I mean, admittedly, Samsung's newest stuff is really nice. But that has not been the case until the last 8 months. And right. I don't understand why HTC has struggled so bad.
Samsung sales are plummeting, too. I don't know if you knew that. But
well, who's selling all the Android devices? Is it just the low-end, inexpensive Android devices?
Yes, that is exactly what it is.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting to me. And so is it a question of saturation? So we've sold everybody who can get whatever they want a phone, and now the only market left is the lower end, maybe a second or a third phone in a family for a kid or someone who can't afford a flagship, and that's the only place that there's room for growth? Yeah, I don't know what that world looks like.
We went down a rabbit hole here that we didn't really intend to
We are
do.
Not prepared at all.
No.
And I know that some of the Chinese handset makers like Huawei and Xiaomi are just absolutely going nuts overseas. I know a lot of those phones don't make it here, but I mean, you know, Xiaomi, we talked about, not Xiaomi, we talked about them in an episode way in our past, and they were the third largest handset manufacturer in China at the time, and like the sixth overall largest handset maker, and they're definitely a company to watch, and a lot of people were really poo-pooing them because their CEO is pretty much just a Steve Jobs ripoff guy and unapologetic about the fact. And, you know, their hardware looks very Apple-esque, and their skinning of Android looks very much like iOS. So, I mean, I know they're growing like crazy over in India and in China. And I don't even know if the Xiaomi handsets are easily available in the States. Do you happen to know if you can get one, Jeff?
You can, but they're not readily available. I mean, like, you can't go down to your AT&T or
you're gonna import
Verizon
one.
Store. You're going to, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, I'm curious if they would even be able to make a dent. I mean, are people, okay, so this is probably, I probably can answer this question, but I'm going to ask it out loud anyway just to hear myself talk. But are people afraid of buying a Chinese-owned handset because of all of the fears of spying? Or is that only people who are afraid of what other countries might do because of what our country is doing to their country?
No, I don't think people are scared about that at all. Not at all. I think it's just brand recognition.
Yeah.
I don't think that's really...
Xiaomi has sold almost 35 million smartphones in the first half of 2015. They are up 33% year over year. for the same time last year. That is crazy. And they are now valued at $45 billion. They're the third largest exporter of phones in the world. And they are estimating that they were estimating they would sell 100 million smartphones this year. It sounds like they are going to have to revise that a little bit, but they are well on their way. They're only 5 years old. That's amazing. They sold 61 million handsets last year and brought in $12 billion in revenue, but they have not talked about profitability, whether they have it or not. But still, that's interesting.
Yeah, so I was just reading some stuff on Samsung's quarter. Net operating income under mobile unit fell 28%.
Wow.
Yeah, and their S6 sales are just way down and not meeting predictions, and it's not looking good for Samsung. I mean, and what's interesting, like the S6.
It's a nice phone.
It is, but you know, as I started looking into it, I guess the battery life is just not good at all. And it's the first one where you can't change the battery.
Yeah, so, that's true.
So not only did they, you know, make it where they took away functionality that people had enjoyed before, they did that and followed up with, oh, by the way, the battery sucks.
We've made it worse in almost every way that you care about, but we're still charging the same amount of money.
That's right.
They're kind of pulling the opposite of an Apple.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's...
Well, and I know that they really made a lot to do about some of the new battery-saving features in the, I don't know what version or what their Samsung flavor TouchWiz coming on the Galaxy S6 was. So I guess is it just not living up to the promises that they made?
Yeah, probably.
That's interesting. Yeah, apparently, and I just did a quick Google, and you're right, there are tons of articles with such headlines as Galaxy S6 failure is dragging down Samsung's profits. And that's not really a headline that you want to read.
No, yeah.
Man, I can't really feel bad for them because they do so much other stuff, but...
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Yeah, they're forecasted 60% fall in quarterly profits, a $7.1 billion loss... Man, there's just article after article of how badly they're sucking.
So I think tomorrow, like when we're recording this, I think tomorrow is the new Galaxy Note announcement.
Oh, is it already time for a Note? I don't even there's so many of them. I don't follow them anymore. And honestly, you know, at this point, if I was going to switch back to Android, the Samsung can't entice me. I mean, the OnePlus One looks gorgeous, and the new Moto X, style? That looks amazing. I mean, there are some serious contenders out there that make me not immediately put Samsung on my short list.
Oh, no, I agree. I mean, I don't know that Samsung would be on my list at all.
Yeah,
they're just too heavy-handed with their changes to Android.
Yeah, and I mean, you've also got some other ones that I always forget about, like the LG G4.
Yep.
I think doesn't Sony have one?
Well, there'll be a new Nexus coming soon. You know, the Huawei, you know, is making a play. The what? OnePlus 2?
Yeah, OnePlus 2. Oh, is okay. So I haven't even heard of that one.
So there's a new, that's just now been released. So, I mean, it's like you said, there are just some bigger players out or other players out there that are, you know,
you could still pick up an Android Fire Phone for $159 on Amazon.
And you get a free year of Prime.
And you get so it's like really like $59.
Yeah.
Which, sure, to be honest, is not a bad deal at all.
Not really.
To have a phone in the drawer in case you know, drop yours in the toilet.
Yep.
You know, and honestly, I'm going to stay with the iPhone, but having used the iPhone 5S now long past its prime, we're getting ready to be two generations of phones out in the next, I think, 30 days or so. I got to say, not having the cutting edge phone, I don't really feel it. And, you know, honestly, people seriously look at some of the nice but entry-level phones out there, like the Moto G. I mean, for $180 or $225, man, that is a nice piece of equipment for that money.
I am still firmly in the I want a new phone every year camp, but I'm just weird. So,
I like shiny things. I'm trying to force myself to be a little better about that.
Nope.
You don't feel the slightest twinge at your first world excess consumption?
Not even a little bit.
With that Apple Watch upon your wrist?
No. I don't feel pang at all. Honestly, not even a little bit.
All right. Well, you know, I'm glad that you can sleep at night, being the horrible, horrible American consumer that you are.
Well, I think we probably ought to consider wrapping this up.
I think so. We should talk about what we love and then let these people get back to their day.
Okay. Well, first, let's just thank our Patreons.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Jeff.
Dennis, Jamie, Jeffrey, John, Kai, Todd. Thank you.
And Carl. We've got a new one that we've got to get added to the list, Carl. Right, thank you guys so much. We greatly appreciate your patronage. You guys are helping keep the lights on, and you know, hopefully we'll build that up and we'll get some cool stuff and we'll review it and we'll give it away and all of that fun stuff. And you guys are in at the ground floor and all of that great stuff. So thank you. We really appreciate it.
We do.
Jeff, what do you love right now?
Okay, so I made a purchase that I actually bought for myself to use at work. I guess that's a little weird, but it was $15. So what are you going to do?
I'm going to submit an expense report is what I'm going to do.
You know, I had a pad of paper, which worked. So I bought a laptop stand.
Okay.
And it's called the Allsop something junior.
The Metal Art Junior?
Yeah, the Metal Art Junior. It is just a basic, inexpensive but well-built laptop stand.
Okay.
To just prop it up, and I have my two monitors next to it, and it's really nice. It's very inexpensive, which is why I was willing to go ahead and buy it for myself. And puts my little laptop up just to the right height, and I am really enjoying it.
Yeah, it looks nice, and it's only $16.
Now, I mean, you know, there are some really, really expensive, beautiful laptop stands for MacBooks out there that you know, aesthetically are significantly much, you know, more appealing than this little beauty. But this is a very utilitarian design and build, but well built. And, you know, powder coated, and seems like it's going to last really well. And ultimately, it lifts it up just as well as those ones that cost $60 or $70.
Yeah, and it's got kind of a cool retro, like, 60s look to it.
Yeah, yeah. So I highly recommend it if you're looking for a laptop stand to, you know, prop up that that MacBook Pro or God forbid, a Windows machine.
You heathen.
I would suggest taking a look at this. It's really, really well built and very nice.
Very cool. So I've got a interesting one because I never thought these words would come out of my mouth, but I love a ballpoint pen. I know that is blasphemy, right?
It kind of is, yeah.
Because I like pens, and I've got a collection of, you know, some not too terribly crazy fountain pens, but some nice fountain pens, and I've got some nice non-fountain pens. And for the longest time, I have used Pilot G2s, and any pen nerds out there are going to be like, that's right, the G2 represent, and it's a gel pen, and it writes reasonably well, but I am a lefty, and ever the curse of a lefty with ink that doesn't dry instantaneously, which is part of the reason that I don't write with fountain pens all that often, because I drag my hand through it, and it smears, and I also have that problem with the G2, and also for me, on a wide variety of papers, the G2 will sometimes skip on me. But other than that, I had always thought it was a pretty decent pen. I always have one or two of them around. So just this last week, I managed to find myself on this thread that was it was one of those like show us what's in your bag threads. And I have no idea why I find those so fascinating, because if I really wanted to see what the average person puts in their bag, I would just empty out my own darn bag. But I just find it fascinating to look at those threads where people empty out their work bag and line everything up nice and neat, take a picture and post all of the stuff that they carry. And someone had posted one where they had this pen, and it was completely unassuming, a little plastic pen, nothing special. But out of all of the things in their picture, they took great pains to point out this pen. And what it was, it is the Uniball Jetstream. There's something more to the name, and I don't remember it, but it's basically a clicky pen. And it is a ballpoint, but it is using some new amazing ink technology that apparently has been given to us by aliens, because this person was praising it as the most amazing pen they have ever written with. It is silky smooth on every paper type. The ink dries nearly instantaneously. It's never scratchy. It never skips. They were literally praising it as the second coming of inky pen goodness. So I needed some new pens. I had a little pen caddy at work, and a few months ago, someone had helped themselves to everything in my pen caddy, which kind of irritated me. And they took a couple of cheap fountain pens, and they took some mechanical pencils, and they took some Sharpie pens and some of my G2s, and generally put me in a bad mood. So I'm like, what the heck? I'm going to get some of these. They're not as cheap as a Bic, but they're not terribly expensive. I think you can get 3, 4, $8 on Amazon. And it is, the official name is the Uniball Jetstream RT, which is retractable fine point rollerball. So I got them in a couple days ago and have been playing with it ever since. And holy crap, this may be the nicest non-fountain pen I have ever written with. On almost any kind of paper I have tried it on, it has been silky smooth. It has not scratched once. It has not skipped once. And even a southpaw like me, you can drag your big meat mitt through it just mere nanoseconds after laying down a line. Doesn't smudge or smear at all. I am completely sold on them. You can actually get a non-clicky kind with the cap, I think is actually even a little bit less. But if you are a pen person or a left-handed person, go check these Uniball Jetstreams out. They are fan-freaking-tastic. And I think actually Wirecutter has even recommended them as the best ink pen that you can get. They are amazing. So that is what I love. You got to get yourself one, Jeff. Go get
awesome.
One.
Yeah, I'll take a look.
All right. You have listened to another episode. I'm not going to call it our best. I'm going to call it solidly not better than average. And that's what we promise, and that's what we deliver. So thank you for tuning in, everybody. If you have a question, a comment, a rant, you just want to call and breathe heavy, we haven't heard from you guys in a little while, give us a call. We're lonely. We would love to hear from some of our fans, and you can give us that call at 317-643-1212. We will listen and address anything that you say on an upcoming show, even if it's just to put your heavy breathing on, which, that might kind of get a little sexy for everybody, you know, maybe. See where it goes. If you want to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at No Better Show. You can look at our website at nobettershow.com. You can send us an email, and that is feedback@nobettershow.com. We will read them all. We will reply. If it's interesting, we'll put it on the air. We'll make you internet famous. You are welcome in advance. If you like the show, please, go and leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, all that good stuff. If you want to help support the show, you can go check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/nobettershow, and that is PATREON. If you don't, we'll be back again, and we just appreciate you tuning in. We hope you guys have a great week. We hope you had a good time listening. You have just listened to the No Better Than Average show, so hopefully now you know better than average too. Have a great week, and we will see you next time, everybody.